Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. Bill Cosby was, for decades, the poster boy for racial equality and harmony. Wise, funny, clever, and with good family values, he was the nation's funny man whose humor crossed those terrible racial lines. He was the charming, harmless, jello man. He was the exponent of maturity and morality as the eminent black physician and down-to-earth father on The Cosby Show. He was the suave, stylish, and sexy secret agent in TV's I Spy. Especially endearing to whites and the better class of American blacks, he was a public critic of black ignorance and bad behavior. He was promoted in the controlled media as America's dad. But in a behavioral and psychological parallel to genetic regression to the mean, Bill Cosby was a rapist, according to no fewer than 15 women who have come forward, many of whom have nothing to gain by the accusation. Based on the preponderance of the evidence, its massive quantity, and its revelation of a pattern of behavior that lasted for many decades, I believe what these women are saying. What I say today is based on my personal evaluation of their stories. They say that Bill Cosby not only raped them, but drugged them so they could not resist. And his targets were almost exclusively white women. None of the major media are saying a word about that fact, though it is undeniable. The motivation for these crimes is also a taboo topic. I'll return to that very important question in a few moments. When she was just 17, Barbara Bowman says that she came face to face with the real Bill Cosby. She says, quote, "Cosby won my trust as a 17-year-old aspiring actress in 1985. Brainwashed me into viewing him as a father figure, and then assaulted me multiple times. In one case, I blacked out after having dinner and one glass of wine at his New York City brownstone, where he had offered to mentor me and discuss the entertainment industry. When I came to, I was in my panties and a man's t-shirt, and Cosby was looming over me. I'm certain now that he drugged and raped me. The final incident was in Atlantic City, where we had traveled for an industry event. I was staying in a separate bedroom of Cosby's hotel suite, but he pinned me down in his own bed while I screamed for help. I'll never forget the clinking of his belt buckle as he struggled to pull his pants off." Close quote. In another incident, Bowman woke up from a drug-induced haze to find herself naked and bent over in a hotel room bathroom, with Cosby partially clothed and towering behind her. Bowman said that Bill Cosby knew she didn't have a father, and he used that fact to manipulate her emotions. Quote, "By the time I was drugged and raped by him in New York, he'd already broken me down, brainwashed me, and made me feel like there was something wrong with me if I resisted his sexual advances. Bill would say he needed to guide me and that I must trust him. I was drugged and raped by that man. He is a monster. He came at me like a monster. Bill used to tell me that he was my father figure and that I needed to trust him as a father 100%. Then he'd drug me and attack me. I was too afraid to talk back." Close quote. Former actress, music industry publicist, and journalist Joan Tarshis recently stated, quote, "I was 19 years old in autumn of 1969. I had flown to Los Angeles from New York to work on a monologue with Godfrey Cambridge, another black comedian. Cosby seemed to take a liking to me, and so I was invited back a few times. I was naturally flattered. I visited the set on my own, and he once introduced me to Sidney Poitier as Midget, his pet name for me because I was 5'3". One day he asked me to stay after the shooting and work on some material with him. I was even more flattered and thought this would help move my writing career along. In his bungalow, he made me a red eye, an alcoholic drink. The next thing I remember was coming to on his couch while being undressed. Through the haze, I thought I was being clever when I told him I had an infection and he would catch it and his wife would know he had sex with someone. But he just found another orifice to use, close quote. Young Miss Tarshis was intimidated and shamed into telling no one and was pressured into seeing Cosby again. Quote, he sent a limo to pick me up and I was dropped off at the Sherry Netherland Hotel and went up to his suite. I remember noticing that his leather shaving kit was filled with bottles of pills and thinking that seemed odd. He made me a red eye, close quote. They went to a theater to see one of his performances. Quote, soon after, I remember feeling very, very stoned and asking his chauffeur to take me back to the car. I was having trouble standing up. The next thing I remember was waking up in his bed back at the Sherry, naked. It took me about 20 years to admit this to anyone. But during those years, as I grew into adulthood, I watched Cosby be praised by everyone from presidents to Oprah to the Jell-O Corporation. It all made me ill. Close quote. Former model Janice Dickinson says that Bill Cosby sexually assaulted her in 1982. At a dinner in Lake Tahoe, Cosby gave her a pill and one glass of red wine. Cosby told her that the pill was to help her with some cramps and stomach pain she was experiencing. Quote, the next morning, I woke up, and I wasn't wearing my pajamas, and I remember before I passed out that I had been sexually assaulted by this man. Before I woke up in the morning, the last thing I remember was Bill Cosby in a patchwork robe, dropping his robe and getting on top of me, and I remember a lot of pain. The next morning, I remember waking up with my pajamas off, and there was semen in between my legs. Close quote. Dickinson's is the latest of 15 separate allegations of rape and abuse leveled at Cosby by white women. Andrea Constand filed a lawsuit against Cosby in 2004. The details of her story, helping with her career, drugging, then interracial rape, match the pattern of the others very closely. Constand's lawyers managed to find an amazing 11 more women who agreed to testify that Bill Cosby had sexually assaulted them. And remember, these 11 are merely the ones who dared to come forward and speak in open court. Unfortunately, Constand was paid off by the wealthy Cosby, and the case never went to trial. Tamara Green, an attorney and former fashion model, says that Bill Cosby drugged and forced himself on her. She was hired by Cosby to help him open a private Los Angeles nightclub, even though her only experience was doing cosmetic and Coca-Cola commercials. When she told him she had the flu one day, he persuaded her to come to lunch with him anyway. Cosby told the young, impressionable woman to take two pills he handed her, which he said were the cold medicine, Contac. She states, quote, I sat down, and he gave me what he said was two pills of an over-the-counter cold medicine. I swallowed them, and 20 minutes later, I felt terrific. 30 minutes later, I was face down in my soup. He volunteered to take me home, and then, because I was so ill, he volunteered to undress me and put me to bed. Close quote. Cosby then sexually assaulted her, but she fought back. Quote, I started fighting him. I took a lamp and broke a window. Close quote. Green added that a young woman she knew, Paige Young, was also raped by Cosby. And Young was so distraught over her drugging rape at his hands that she was driven to kill herself. Given this pattern of behavior, repeated again and again. Young white woman. Offer to mentor or help her career. Drugging and rape while unconscious. It's very likely that what we have heard so far is just the tip of the iceberg. What actually goes on in very Jewish, very pro-race-mixing Hollywood is probably much worse than we can even imagine. It's a very good thing for white people that family values interracial assimilationist icon Cosby has been outed and shown for what he really is. Every time something like this happens, a few thousand more people stop believing in the machinery of illusion and start looking for answers, start looking for the National Alliance. In a live comedy album he released in 1969 with a title, It's True, It's True, that he probably wishes he hadn't chosen, Cosby talks, laughs, and smirks about using a drug to get women to have sex with him. He starts out saying he heard about it when he was 13, but quickly switches to an anecdote showing he was still interested in obtaining the drug, Spanish Fly, as an adult while he was starring in I Spy. From the context, it's clear that the women he wants to drug are white, European, Spanish women. Hearing this monster giggling while he gets his mostly white audience to laugh along with him at the fun idea of stripping women of their ability to say no is a sickening experience. Even at the age of 12 or 13, when I first heard this routine on an LP record at a friend's house, I knew there was something profoundly sick about this man. I'll put a link to the performance in the text version of this broadcast, or a simple search on YouTube for Bill Cosby and Spanish Fly. We'll find it. Journalist Mark Ebner states that he had enough information in 2007 to take Cosby down, but the media bosses refused to publish his story because Cosby was such an icon of civil rights. That is to say, exposing his abuse and drugging and rape of white women would hurt the racial mixing propaganda narrative those same media were promoting. Ebner states, quote, "Even more than Woody Allen, Bill Cosby was a beloved figure and civil rights pioneer. Hardened editors were horrified at the prospect of taking him down. I might as well have pitched a story about Martin Luther King Jr. philandering with white women. The story went nowhere." Close quote. Well, Mr. Ebner, thank you for a very revealing insight, but the truth is, MLK did philander, and worse, with white women. But the media blackout on that is still in force. It's only because Hannibal Buress, a black comedian who resents Cosby for his anti-ghetto culture, assimilationist position, brought up the rapes that the story gained any traction in the media at all. Women's activists bemoan the fact that the media only took the rape and assault story seriously after a man brought them up. But they themselves fail to note that it was a black man. Men, even published male writers, who weren't black, and the more than a dozen white women who were brave enough to go public with their stories, have been trying for years, in some cases decades, to get this story to the public. But it wasn't permitted until uncensorable social media went viral with it after Buress' stand-up routine. Then they couldn't ignore the story they'd been ignoring for years anymore. They were forced, reluctantly, to take down their false idol or lose all credibility. Make no mistake about it, the media bosses, who are almost all Jews, don't like any story that might make white people realize they're being harmed, being dispossessed, and being literally and figuratively raped by a power structure that is determined to exterminate them. We see horrific torture, rapes, and killings with white victims and non-white perpetrators, and the media carefully fail to mention, until forced by circumstances to do so, the race of the victims or the attackers or both. We see cases with black victims, like Michael Brown's and Rodney King's, turned into worldwide sensations, triggering a public outrage so strong that a near insurrection results. But cases of brutal savagery against whites are carefully kept local and reported as little as possible and as sanitized as possible in the national news. As I said before, the real motivation for Cosby's crimes is a totally taboo topic in the Jewish-controlled media. Think about it. Did Bill Cosby really have to drug and rape anyone to have sex? No. He was married to a cultured and shapely mulatto woman all through the period when these rapes took place, and she bore him children. And this was Hollywood in the anything-goes era of the sexual revolution. There were surely any number of ambitious starlets and high-price harlots of all races who would have given rich, famous Bill Cosby all the sex he could handle and more. And I don't doubt he took advantage of that degeneracy. But sex with a willing white woman was apparently not enough for Bill Cosby. If these accounts are true, and I believe they are, he wanted to rape white women and not just sexually possess them. He wanted to violate them against their will. Some of his victims describe the times when they did remember his approaches to them and the sick intercourse he forced on them. One white woman was pinned to the bed by Cosby's forearm. Another was grabbed around the neck. Another was forced to masturbate him. Another, waiting in her dressing room just before an appearance on The Tonight Show, had her head pushed into Cosby's groin and his genitals into her mouth and forced to give him oral sex. And who knows how many women there were who have not yet come forward. Who knows what else happened while they were unconscious? All white women. All manipulated or forced or drugged. All taken against their will. Taken against their will because that's the way Bill Cosby wanted it. It was exactly the way Bill Cosby wanted it. Journalist Greg Kaye tells us, quote, "It is often argued that rape is not a sex crime, but a crime of violence or of power and control. However, interracial rape, while it encompasses all such motivations, is something more. Black-on-white rape is usually a violent political act, a form of terrorism, the ultimate statement of the black power movement that has disguised itself under an innocuous-sounding banner called civil rights. Being able to take the woman or women of someone else and use the same for one's own gratification is the ultimate statement of superiority and the utmost denigration of the male or group to whom the woman in question belongs, as well as the woman herself. That act demonstrates not only to the victim, but also to the kin of both the raped and the rapist, that the rapist has power." Close quote. The black writer and darling of many a Jewish college professor, Eldridge Cleaver, admitted as much. Quote, "Rape was an insurrectionary act. It delighted me that I was defying and trampling upon the white man's law, upon his system of values, and that I was defiling his women. And this point, I believe, was the most satisfying to me, because I was very resentful. I was getting revenge." Close quote. There's many a Bill Cosby and Eldridge Cleaver on the basketball courts of rapidly browning America, I believe. Putting two different subspecies of the same species together in a confined area is usually fatal to one or the other or both. That's what is being done to us in America and Europe. Every white country currently under the control of the Jewish oligarchs is subject to the multiracial experiment. Mestizos, Arabs, blacks, and others are flooding across our borders, swelling their numbers, and being encouraged to mix and/or get their revenge upon us. Who opened the borders? Who commands the film and multimedia empires which glorify non-white males as partners for white females? The same tribe that elevated Bill Cosby to star status, groomed and used him to promote their racial mixing agenda, and empowered him to rape with impunity for almost 50 years. That's who. Sheldon Leonard is the man who decided that Americans needed a black-white team to star in their next adventure show, and chose Cosby for the I Spy spot. Leonard carefully crafted an image of Cosby that would be acceptable to white viewers in general and attractive to white women. Cosby even described Leonard as my last father, a man who had made him what he is today. Ed Weinberger was the lead creator of The Cosby Show and the brains behind the idea of reshaping Americans' attitudes toward blacks, encouraging integration by portraying a black family exemplifying all the virtues of middle-class white Americans. Both Leonard and Weinberger are Jews. Bill Cosby is just the latest example of what is really a war on white women and on all whites that is pursued through every possible avenue of defilement, denigration, and destruction, including interracial rape. As I said a few weeks ago in my program about Charlottesville's Hannah Graham, black males rape white women more often than they rape black women, and blacks overall rape at a rate between 4.4 and 11 times higher than whites. And blacks commit interracial rape at a rate at least 70 times that of whites. It's all there in the official statistics. Statistics that for some reason never seem to be in the headlines or nightly news stories on the Jewish-controlled media, despite the fact that tens of thousands of white women, at least, are victims every year. What value system can we give the next generation that will allow us to survive this onslaught? What moral code can we teach our children that will prevent them from being the next victims? The feminists and the system and even the churches just tell us that young women, they would almost never say young white women, need to be more careful, or that men, they would almost never say black men, need to stop raping. Safety courses and having young white men falsely told that they're part of a rape culture is going to do less than nothing. We need to teach our children that they are part of something greater than themselves, that their race has an unlimited destiny of greatness, and that everything we do is a part of that, that the worst sin of all sins is to defile their genetic inheritance through racial mixing, that white men must stand up for and protect their infinitely precious women from the depredations of aliens, and that white women must understand that their most sacred purpose is to pass on our gene patterns undimmed into the future. In a society imbued with values such as these, the monstrous Bill Cosby and his ilk would not be permitted within our borders, not within 1,000 miles of any white girl or woman. And his handlers and creators and enablers would not be allowed to exist. You've been listening to American Dissident Voices, the radio program of the National Alliance, founded by William Luther Pierce in 1970. This program is published every week at whitebiocentrism.com and nationalvanguard.org. Please write to us at National Alliance, Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. We welcome your support, your inquiries, and your help in spreading our message of hope to our people. Once again, that address is Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. Until next week, this is Kevin Alfred Strom reminding you of the words of Richard Berkeley Cotton. Freedom is not free. Free men are not equal, and equal men are not free.
For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout to the skies. We will now have our rebirth. For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout to the skies. We'll be right back.
shout to the sky.